2015, an elite DFS Army Commando unit formed to bring high-level DFS strategy to the masses. Today, hated by DFS sharks and lineup sellers alike, they continue their quest to turn Joe into DFS pro.
DFS podcast presented to you by DFSArmy.com. We've got all the tools you need to become a winning daily fantasy golf player, and we've got resources for every other sport as well. So come check us out at DFSArmy.com, promo code TACO, to get access to the VIP cheat sheet that I will be referencing in this podcast, along with all sorts of other tools for all sorts of other sports. That's DFSArmy.com, promo code TACO. Okay, so let's get into this slate for the Valero Texas Open. This tournament is pretty infamous for me, personally. Back when DFS just started for golf, back in early 2015, this tournament was one of the first tournaments I really kind of went, you know, all in on. I'd started to figure out the process coming off of a pretty good Masters, just had the highest hopes in the world, and just like that, everything came crashing down as the early tee ran into 40 plus mile an hour winds with crazy ridiculous gusts, and just completely wiped out everyone that teed off early. All the PM golfers, they pretty much got a free pass into round two, and unfortunately, all the guys that I was on had early tee time, so that taught me a very valuable lesson about always check the weather before the tournament starts off. But it looks to be a pretty good tournament so far this week, but we'll get more into the weather as Thursday comes approaching, because it seems to change very rapidly. But last year at this tournament, it was actually the biggest DFS win in my career ever, winning multiple GPPs. And it was just a fantastic week. I'm really sad that Martin Piller is not in the field, because that was my guy. You know, that strategy I love to use, just picking kind of a random scrub with a reason to pick him that is like 0.1% owned. He ended up coming T4, and he was a difference maker for sure, and he was kind of one of my go-to scrubs that week. And The all-in call on Charlie Hoffman winning as well was amazing. But enough of tooting my own horn. I'm hoping to duplicate the results this year, but it's going to be a little bit tougher. The pricing is really tight. But before we get into the field, let's take a look at the course. We're back in Texas at TPC San Antonio. It's a Pete Dye design, and it plays just a little bit over par. 0.2 strokes over par, you know, kind of middle of the road, leaning a little harder. The courses on tour actually average minus 0.2 strokes to par. This one's 0.2 strokes above par, so, you know, just a little tiny bit harder, just because it's such a long course. It's a 7,430-yard par 72 with extremely long par 5s. Every par 5 is over 550 yards, and several of them are over 600 yards. So, it was among the bottom of the tour in eagle percentage last year. And there aren't many birdies to be had either. But at the same time, there aren't many bogeys or double bogeys or triple bogeys. This is a par golf course. You're going to see a lot of parring. The holes on this course are actually pretty interesting. You've got a few really interesting holes on here. You've got two drivable par 4s. Well, not necessarily drivable, but they're about 340 yards. So, actually, Aaron Baddeley a few years ago, he proved that you can drive these greens on these really short par 4s. An interesting story about him. he had his first shot go out of bounds, and then he managed to shoot the most interesting birdie ever as his second shot off of the tee actually made it in for what would have been a par 4 ace, an extremely, extremely rare par 4 ace, but it just ended up being a birdie instead. That's pretty interesting. You have to have some serious power to get the greens on these par 4s, and I'm sure that chaotic wind being in his back what really helped him with that, but nonetheless, these greens are pretty big. They're actually Bermuda greens. When you think of Texas courses, you know, you think more of like the bent grass and rye, but this is a Bermuda green with they're pretty large greens, and they're really slow on the stimp meter at only 11.5. But they're some of the bigger greens on tour, but they're pretty tricky to get on, actually. The green and regulation percentage last year was only 56%. That's one of the worst marks on tour. And a lot of the greens are protected. A few holes have, you know, trees in front of the green, or just really interesting shapes for the green. And the fairway gets really narrow as you go over the 300-yard mark. They're really wide if you're a shorter hitter. So these shorter hitters will be able to hit the fairway pretty well. But at such a long course, that's not going to be very helpful. You know, Jim Furyk isn't going to do too well hitting it 250 yards when it's a 7,400-yard course. So kind of a catch-22 there. You want the power, but the more power you have, the harder it is to hit the fairways. So instead of looking at driving distance and driving accuracy necessarily, I'm really going to look at strokes gained off the tee. I think that's going to be really important this week. Because driving, unlike last week, driving is going to be crucial. But you're going to need a bit of accuracy to go with your driving distance. Like I had mentioned, these par fives are super long. So par five scoring is not going to be too helpful. I mean, it will be nice to actually save par and maybe even eagle these things. Although some of them are so long, you'd be lucky to hit a five just because you're going to be hitting some really long approach shots even after your first two initial shots. Like, no one's going to be driving the greens on these. And actually, the eagles on this course come from people driving the green on those short par fours. So it'll be pretty interesting. It's a little different than some of the other courses that we've been used to. Definitely not a cookie-cutter type of course. And actually, one of the holes on here, it's really interesting. There's a sand trap in the middle of the green. Really strange hole. And depending on the pin placement, could be very interesting. So basically, what I'm looking at statistically is I'm looking for an awesome tee to green game. Now, that's always important, but this way I think it'd be a really good metric to look for. Just overall tee to green game. Approach game is literally always important every single week. So strokes gained approach, just automatically add it to the list of things you're looking at every week. I had said strokes gained off of the tee. Putting is really nice. You with these larger greens, and they're kind of slower. You know, putting's always a nice auxiliary stat, but it's the one that's represented least statistically. It's because it's such a, you know, it's such an up and down thing week to week. Like, anyone's putter can get hot, but I'd say just like, you know, maybe avoid like the worst putters, and maybe give a little extra consideration to particularly good putters, but I always like to put less stock in that unless it's a course where putting is really important or really not important. But anyway, on to this field. You've got Matt Kuchar, once again, the most expensive, and once again, 11,500 on DraftKings. And with his odds being even worse this week at 18-1. Now, Kuchar actually had one of the more interesting rounds ever a few years ago when there was that, like, you know, like mini hurricane that happened on the first day in that morning tee. And he actually had a morning tee, but Kuchar did not give a shit. He went out and was a first round leader despite playing right in those wins. So that was pretty interesting to see from him. He ended up fading back to a T15 finish, but he has pretty good course history here. Nothing too exciting outside of a T4 in 2014, but pretty typical Matt Kuchar stuff. Posting a lot of top 20s. He obviously was the favorite to win last week and had a shaky start to the week, but ended up flying back for a T11 finish, sort of like at the Masters. Kind of a similar result there, just with less holes in one. I'm not really going to pay for him. 11,500, that's just kind of nuts, but pricing's really hard this week, so it's hard to know who to pay for exactly. So you might end up paying up for some of these guys whose prices seem just wrong, with it being, you know, kind of crappy field, and the pricing just being really tight in general. Next up on the card is someone who's been really bad, and it shows you the strength of this field with him being second overall in price. Brooks Koepka, who missed the cut here last year, has missed a bunch of cuts so far this season, but had a good showing at the Masters, finishing T11. Do we trust Brooks yet? I don't know. He's pretty good off of the tee, but, you know, I just don't know if we've seen it from him recently outside of that Masters showing. He'd taken a few weeks off before the Masters. Maybe, I don't know, maybe he got whatever was wrong with him, you know, together, but I don't know. He was, like, rolling last year, too, and hit this spot and ended up missing the cut. I just don't like the play at all. I don't think anyone's going to really go with Brooks that much. He used to be popular, but he's been so bad. Just so bad this year. I don't know. I'll forego him, but if he has another good performance after the Masters, I might consider using him again, finally. It'd be nice to have the good Brooks, the old Brooks Koepka back. But at 24-1, $10,900, not worth it. Maybe play him on FanDuel at 92, because there aren't really a lot of options to spend up on FanDuel for sure. But don't really like Brooks. Next guy on the list I obviously love a lot, and I was going to go all in on him. I said, all in on Charlie Hoffman if he's 8,500 or less. And on FanDuel, that is the case. So all in on Charlie Hoffman, round 1, 2, 3, 4, it doesn't matter. All in on Charlie Hoffman on FanDuel. He's 8,300. DraftKings, he's 10,700. They are definitely showing a lot of respect to his course history. And his course history is just a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful thing here. He won last year, and it was so due. He has never finished worse than 13th. Outside of once, he made the cut, and then he crapped his way down to a 70th place finish. But outside of that one showing, he has not finished worse than T13 since 2006. So this is like a decade long of dominance, just top 10 finish after top 10 finish. Charlie Hoffman, he's cash money here, defending champ, has been pretty good recently, and like I was hoping, he missed the cut last week. I was hoping, obviously, that this price would be a little more reasonable so I could go all in on him, but nonetheless, he had been rolling until last week, missed the cut last week at a course that honestly does not fit his style at all. But nonetheless, Hoffman, I'm going to use a crap ton of him. He has better odds than Koepka. Not going to like the fact that he's 10,700, but honestly, there isn't really a whole lot to spend on this slate, so might as well spend on the course horse. And honestly, there are not a lot of course horses at this course. Like, course history doesn't really matter all that much, but there are really only, like, two horses at this place. But this is one of the more egregious examples of course horsery that we see on tour. Hoffman, cash money, lock him in. Jimmy Walker won in 2015. He's 10,500. Super expensive on FanDuel, 9,700. I think he's the second most expensive guy on FanDuel, so no way. But Jimmy, we've seen him Make several cuts in a row now. Didn't do bad at the Masters. Had a sneaky T18 finish. Do I think he's the fourth best player in the field? I don't know, but the field just drops off so much at this point, and there's really nothing up top. I don't know why all the pros are still out there. I honestly don't know why John Rahm isn't in this slate. Like, you're not a super stud yet, John Rahm. Come back here, clean up this field, get another tour win under your belt. What are you doing, John? Anyway, Jimmy Walker, you know, power guy, not the most accurate off of the tee, very good putter, pretty good approach game so far this year, ranks pretty well in the efficiency scoring projections, better than everyone else, more expensive than him. Not the best on the board, but, you know, still pretty good. I like Jimmy a little bit on DraftKings, not on FanDuel. I don't know, there's not really a whole lot to say about him. He's usually a good, you know, Texas swing guy, but, you know, he missed the cut here last year, so it kind of, you know, throws you for a loop when they win and then just miss the cut the following year, because I'm sure, I mean, a lot of people used him last year. I actually didn't. I was going to be off him because he was, like, the most expensive player besides, like, Spieth or something, but was not really on Walker. It ended up being good, but I don't know. His course history here is just like miscut, like T3, miscut, win, miscut. You know, I don't know. Maybe he'll do good. I'll sprinkle him in just in case. But 10,500 just seems like way too much to pay for Jimmy. But that's the case with a lot of these people here at the tighter pricing. Which I'm glad. I'm glad we've moved past the super soft pricing that we see at a lot of the stronger fields. So it's more of a challenge this week. Ryan Moore at 10,200. Like him quite a bit. Pretty good long-term form. Pretty good short-term form. He hasn't missed a cut since the Genesis Open. And we saw him take top 10 at the Masters. In his only event played here, he finished T8 back in 2012. Moore isn't incredible, like, off the tee, fairly accurate, but for a guy that hit like that short off of the tee, he's not like the most accurate. I just like the odds. He has the same odds as Brooks Koepka, but at 900 cheaper, and, well, 700 cheaper, but still, I mean, I think one of these like 20 to 30 to 1 kind of guys are gonna win it, and maybe that's Hoffman, but I mean, his odds are only one worse than Hoffman. He's 24-1. Hoffman's 23-1. Just pretty obvious savings here. Moore is pretty damn consistent. Has a really nice adjusted stroke average. He'll do it for you. And he's so cheap on FanDuel. He's kind of a lock on FanDuel as well. 8,100. That's just nuts. Like, just start with him. Start with Hoffman. You're good to go. So maybe I'll use him a lot more in FanDuel. Maybe look elsewhere around here. It's just I really don't want to buy any of these like top 10 guys. Cause next you got Brandon Grace. He did pretty well last week defending his title at the RBC Heritage. Now, I don't really ever like playing Grace too much, but T9 last year just never missed the cut. But other than the T9, nothing impressive. Statistically, there's just nothing about his game that excites me at all. So just kind of a boring play that I don't really like. Pretty expensive on FanDuel. A player like Moore, former winner here, Brendan Steele. This was his first win on tour back in 2011, and has 4 top 13 finishes in the last 6 years. He's been rock solid this year. Has made every cut. Did well at the Masters. I love him. He's going to be a guy I pick a lot. DraftKings and FanDuel, pretty well priced. 9,900. I don't mind paying that for him here, just this week of a field. I mean, he's back to the Bermuda greens, and, you know, he always does better on Bermuda. And his adjusted stroke average, outside of one player that I'll get to real soon, I do believe is one of the best in the entire field. So Steele is going to be chalky, but You might want to eat the chalk. Very nice. Awesome cash gameplay. Moving along to Patrick Reed, whose game is obviously in the toilet right now. He came runner-up last year, but I don't think anyone's really ready to play Patrick Reed yet. Kevin Chappell is very interesting at 9,400. Well, not interesting at 9,400. He's very interesting at 6,600 on FanDuel. Now, talk about a pricing discrepancy. Holy God. FanDuel comes out with their prices before DraftKings, but I don't really think they're looking at each other whatsoever. Maybe FanDuel would be different if DraftKings came out first, because their pricing is a little better. FanDuel still doesn't really know what they're doing oftentimes, and they haven't learned to wait for, like, the sportsbook's odds to settle out a little bit, so I don't really know how they do it. They use a really weird algorithm, but for some reason, Kevin Chappell is 6,600. And that's pretty incredible there. Kind of not really an all-in guy, because I would never want to go all-in on Kevin Chappell, but he looks to be in a really good spot here. Finished fourth last year. Runner-up back in 2011. T7 at the Masters. I mean, did anyone even realize that? He just kind of snuck up there. And has been playing reasonably well. I would say he's overpriced on DraftKings for sure, and you know, that's not really what I care about here. I'm just going to use him like crazy on FanDuel round one and round two. Really bad putter. Like, really, really, really bad putter. Other than that, statistically, just average. That's pretty much the play there. Just play him on FanDuel. Don't play him on DraftKings. He's way too expensive. For the other way around, don't play Zach Johnson at 9,400 on FanDuel. No way. Third most expensive guy for how he's been playing. No, but 9,300 on DraftKings might be a little bit more reasonable. Still overpriced, but, last 3 years, he's 3-for-3, all top 30 finishes, a T6 in 2014, but his game is just not good right now. Missed the cut at his Masters, hasn't really put up any decent performance. Been missing a lot of cuts. Just not interested. Let's just get right into the play here. This guy is going to be 40%, if not like 50% owned. And like in cash, maybe like 80 to 90% owned. Because, you know, if you don't have him, I don't know what you're doing. But he sticks out like a sore thumb in pretty much everything except for course history. And that'd be Adam Hadwin at 9,100, 89 on FanDuel. His only attempt here is a miscut in 2015, but it's pretty obvious that his game just got absolutely lifted to some otherworldly level at this point. Like, he is such a better golfer now. It's ridiculous. He's just been on a tear this season, hasn't missed a cut. Pretty much a permanent fixture in the top 30. Has by far the best adjusted stroke average and efficiency scoring projection on the board. And at 80 or 9,100, that's really nice. I'm liking me some Hadwin, but he is going to be so chalk. He's actually not top on the list. I'll show you who that is later. But he's second on the list in efficiency scoring projections. Really awesome par 4 scorer. And, you know, he's just great overall game. Awesome putter. Awesome tee to green. They're actually, update, not the best putter. He'd been known for his putting. Not the greatest, honestly. It's just his tee to green game and his approach game is just nasty. So, you don't really have to putt that well in your approach game. It's just sticking it all the time. Hitting a lot of birdies. Awesome off the tee. You know, good accuracy and good driving distance. So, kind of what we're looking for here. Hadwin, you could fade him. You could definitely fade him if he was going to be so highly owned in tournaments. But if you want to play it safe, just play the Hadwin. He's where you want to spend your money there. Billy Horschel. Also another strong play, although he's been playing like crap lately. If you don't count some pretty good finishes at the Arnold Palmer and the Honda Classic, or he finished T4. Just missed the cut at the RBC, which is somewhere you'd figure he'd do well. But statistically, still looking good. Awesome in greens and regulation. The only struggle he really has is scrambling. And his course history here is kind of pretty good. Three out of the last 4 years, he's finished top four. Outside of that, though, he's a missed cut, a T75, and a T74. So, missed the cut once, and the other 2 years, he might as well have missed the cut, because he's probably scoring negative DraftKings points, just falling down to the bottom of the cut leaderboard. But those top five finishes, very interesting. His odds are about the same as Hadwin, just a little bit worse. And he's really nice on FanDuel, where he's 7,300. It's a pretty interesting play there. 8,900, not a bad pivot off of Hadwin in tournaments at pretty similar odds and significantly less ownership. So could be an interesting move there. Luke Donald at 8,700. He did what he always did last week. It's crazy. Now with the RBC Heritage, he has seven second or third place finishes in 9 years with zero wins. That's just crazy. But Luke Donald, the last time he played here, really the only time he's played here in the last decade, was last year and he finished T13. So that's not bad. Really, really short off the tee, so that's what really worries me about him at a course like this. However, his game outside of driving is pretty nice. I mean, this is a pretty decent comeback season for him. I mean, obviously he's not number one in the world anymore or anything like that, but not bad. If you don't count his driving game, which is just going to be really important here, he's been pretty awesome. Ridiculously great scrambling. Definitely the best in the field. That's all he did last week, was just scramble, 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 save all the pars. But I don't know if that's really that beneficial here, because not only does he not have the distance, he doesn't have the driving accuracy either. It's kind of bad. Ranks negatively in greens and regulation, so maybe a bit of an avoid. Maybe people would be game logging, see he just finished second, but he did do pretty well last year. I don't know. Not too thrilled on him. I used all my Luke Donald shares last week. I'm gonna leave it be. Up next, we have a guy who recently forgot how to golf, but might have remembered. Finished T11 last week. That'd be Ryan Palmer. Very strange event for him to finish T11 at a pure accuracy course, when that is absolutely not his game. He's a bomber. So maybe it's just get that driver out of his hand and he becomes good all of a sudden. So that's a bit of a concern there, because I could really see that being true. He's an atrocious putter, like so bad. But tee to green, one of the best marks in the field, if not the best, I think, of people that have a relatively good sample size. But his efficiency scoring projections are just trashed, absolute trash, compared to everyone else in this range. So not too thrilled about Palmer, but his recent course history is pretty good. Three top 10 finishes, made the last five cuts in a row, so not terrible. But I don't know, with Palmer, I'm still just worried, because early on the season we just saw him miss like six cuts in a row, so I'm gonna have to see a little bit more from him before I believe him too much. Byung-Hung An just makes a bunch of cuts, but he really hasn't done anything. He can't perform on the weekend, like, ever. He's not going to be a popular play at all, because his odds are really bad compared to everyone around him. But, you know, statistically, he's all right. You know, longer off the tee, and not the most inaccurate, just kind of average. Pretty decent tee to green game, just a really bad putter. And that's a lot of the people in this range, actually, are really bad putters. So if you're picking from the 8,000s, unless you're picking Luke Donald, you're going to get a crap putter. Because next guy on the list would be Tony Finau. Pretty god darn bad putter right there. Just everything else really good. Good tee to green. very long off the tee, and all right accuracy. I mean, I like Finau a lot, actually. If I'm going to pick anyone in the $8,000 range, probably be Tony Finau. He's been really nice this season. I had that T5 at the Valspar, and, his only performance here is a couple years ago. He finished 68th. I mean, that's not great, but, his odds stick out. He's going to be popular. Everything just looks really good for him overall, so he seems like a pretty obvious play at 8,400. Kevin Na, I don't know about him. He finally broke his missed cut streak last week at a tournament he historically played really well at and just did okay. Super short off the tee, so that kind of holds back my interest a little bit. But the last two times he played here, he finished T20, T11. So that's kind of interesting. But I don't like where his game's at right now. Ollie Schneiderjans almost won last week. Was leading late. So that's very interesting for him. I thought he was going to get his breakthrough win on tour. Ended up being Wes Bryan instead, which is not bad at all. He's going to be super popular. Because everyone saw what he did last week. That T3 looks really nice on the game log. Had a T8 back at the Genesis. Odds stick out. T to green game is there. The only thing I worry about with him, bad driving accuracy. And not like the longest off of the tee either. Just a little above average. And as we saw in the back nine last week, just an atrocious putter. Like, his stats don't really represent that, but, like, when it's on the line, he's just such a bad putter. But his approach game, I do believe his approach game is second best in the field. So, it could be interesting. Maybe getting it closer than everyone else for his putts on these really large greens and being able to place them right. So, interesting play there, but he will be popular. I don't see a problem with fading him because he likes to miss cuts, but he does have really high upside for tournaments. Going down the rest of this field, JJ Spahn's very interesting at 7,800, 7K on FanDuel. Had the T6 finish last week and has really had an awesome rookie season so far to begin. Great off the tee overall, good accuracy in driving. So I like him a lot, good putter. Varner at 7,800 also. Not so interesting on DraftKings, but a lot more interesting on FanDuel, where he's 5,900. Came ninth here last year. He's made four cuts in a row, so he had a shaky beginning to the season, but it's looking a little better for him. He's longer off the tee, but not the most accurate, and doesn't really do anything else that well besides drive, but I like him as a round 1-2 option because he tends to start off really hot and then fizzle off. But, he scores a lot. Good birdie or better percentage guy, so definitely a FanDuel play. I'm a fan of Martin Laird at 7,700, a former winner here in 2013. And he's just pretty good week to week. Great scoring average, adjusted stroke average, pretty good off the tee. Above average distance and a really good accuracy, so he could be a nice little play there. I love Sung Kang. I loved him last week. I love him this week at 7,400. I like him even more at 5,900 on FanDuel. Maybe he'll be popular finally, but he's been on a roll lately. T2 at Houston, and then T11 last week at the RBC Heritage. Really, really nice game overall. Awesome off-the-tee marks. Above average in distance and accuracy. Really like him a lot for the price on both sides. He kind of flies under the radar, like 1% owned last week. Really, really like him a lot. If you believe in comebacks here, Stuart Sink finally got off of his, like, 5 or 6 long tournament top 30 streak with a missed cut last week. Of course, right as we get in on him, but nonetheless, not the best win props, but still just, I don't know, I guess the best thing about him is he's a cut maker, but really he's His efficiency scoring projections are fantastic. And he actually ranks fourth overall in the efficiency scoring projections. And do you know who ranks number one overall? That would be a Luke List at 7,600. 6,600 on FanDuel. It'll be interesting to see if he's highly owned or not, because him and Keegan Bradley at 7,600 both have odds that just stick out like a sore thumb in this $7,000 range. Luke List was on a super hot streak until he missed the cut last week, and I think that missed cut makes a lot of sense, because he's a pure bomber at what was a raw accuracy course. So if you take his driver out of his hand, you know, that's like his number one weapon right there. This is a very, very long course, and he might actually be able to capitalize on these par fives where no one else is able to. He's the best driver in the field and has the best efficiency scoring projections of anyone, because he excels at very, very long par fives. He's actually good at very long par threes as well, but really good at long par fours, long par fives. His distance is awesome. T29 last year. I like him as one of my favorite plays on the board. As for Keegan Bradley, I'm never too big of a fan of his, but I really don't mind him at 7,600. And by the way, Luke List 6,600 on FanDuel. That's a very hefty play for me. I like him a lot. But Keegan Bradley, he's more expensive on FanDuel, but a pretty good DraftKings value. T37 last year. Ninth back in 2011, the only other time he had played here. What I like the most about him, what makes him a really solid play for me, besides his pretty good form recently, would be his off-the-tee game is just monstrous. He's well above field average when it comes to driving distance. Not so much as Luke List, but Luke List has under average driving accuracy. As where Keegan Bradley, also very accurate, so good total driving guy. I don't like his scrambling game, that's pretty bad, but other than that, he's actually been putting like okay. Hits a lot of birdies. The efficiency scoring projections are not there compared to Luke List, but I really like how he's able to have kind of what we're looking for here. Long off the tee, but with accuracy to get it in the fairways as they narrow down. So I like those two, and it'll be interesting to see who's higher owned, because anyone that looks at odds compared to pricing will see these guys. It just should be interesting to see, you know, which of these guys have higher ownership, because neither of them are really too popular week to week. I personally like Nick Watney at 7,500, but doesn't actually seem like the best play. I guess I prefer Kang for cheaper, but I don't know. That's just a guy that I personally root for, who's been pretty good this season. Not a lot of plays in the lower $7,000 range that I'm into until you hit Daniel Summerhays at 7,000. He is the second course horse here, as he has finished top 13 last 4 years, including a T2 finish in 2014 and a T4 finish in 2015. Really awesome as far as course history goes. And recently he's made a few cuts. He hasn't really done anything interesting, but he did make the cut at the Masters, which is pretty nice. Statistically, nothing that interesting. He can scramble, which I guess will be nice with the really low greens regulation percentage at this course, but I don't know. This would just be pretty much a pure course history play, but his odds also stick out pretty good for this range. That, and there really just aren't a whole lot of good plays at all in this low $7,000 range. You really need to get into the 6,000s to start finding some value. I will point out that there's a $7,000 guy who's 4,800 on FanDuel, and that would be Brandon Hagee, who is one of the longest hitters on tour. He just has no real accuracy whatsoever to speak of. So just an interesting, like, super punt there. JT Poston at 6,900 looking very, very nice, has made several cuts in a row with some quality top 15 finishes in that span. Statistically just average, no course history here, but his recent form makes him a very interesting play. I like Bud Cauley a lot as well, the same price. Just finished T9 at the Masters, but at the RBC Heritage. Really, really long off the tee, and, you know, not the worst is when it comes to accuracy. Really good green and regulation percentage. So I like Bud Cauley quite a lot. And I would really like to like Scott Piercy here. But he's missed three cuts in a row. 6,900 is really cheap for him, and his odds really do stick out. And he's pretty expensive on FanDuel, but I don't know if we can trust him with all these missed cuts in a row. I don't like playing anyone who's hit the three mark when it comes to missed cuts, so we'll have to see if he can rebound, but this could possibly be a spot. Pretty good course history, and always does pretty well. Moving down a bit into the $6,000 range here, Aaron Baddeley. I told you a story about him earlier, but he actually is really good at this course, always makes a cut. T3 in 2010. Did miss the cut last week, but again, a pure bomb with no accuracy at an accuracy course. His putting has regressed a lot. He used to be one of the best putters on tour. Now he's a little bit under average. So statistically, not really liking the play, but he does fit the course very well as far as efficiency scoring goes. And of course, the course history here. Mid 6,000 range, kind of empty. I like Nick Taylor as a sneaky play. T21 last year, T22 at his last event, and he was like 0.1% owned, so could possibly be sneaky, but the Vegas odds really do like him, so that might drive his ownership up a little bit, but I don't know, maybe it had something to do with him being Canadian, and it was the Royal Bank of Canada that sponsored the, I don't know, but in this range, there's another Canadian, 6,500, David Hearn, who has made five cuts in a row now, and finished T13 here last year, T11 in 2012. Could be a very interesting play there. Statistically looks bad at everything, but think long-term, and he's actually one of the better approach guys, usually. He's just been in really bad form this season, but he seems to have turned it around, five straight made cuts, so could be interesting. We see the return of one of my favorite golfers here, Tim Wilkinson. T29 here last year. Last we saw him, was back in the Puerto Rico, a T17 there, which isn't that special, but nonetheless, he is 4,800 on FanDuel. That's where I will be using him. Very interesting there. Awesome, awesome scrambler. Yeah, pretty good overall tee to green game. Just very short off the tee, so that is the one concern I do have with him. Another awesome punt for FanDuel would be Xander Schauffele. I don't know how to pronounce his last name, honestly. Never heard on the coverage or anything. The coverage would never, you know, go over him. But it's Xander Schauffele. You see, just type X in the search bar. You'll find Xander. Really awesome efficiency scoring projections with a okay sample size. Really long off the tee. Makes a lot of birdies, so pretty interesting play at 4,500, which I do believe is dead minimum on FanDuel. So, pretty nice punt. Frederik Jakobsen, or Freddy Jakobsen, depending on what site you're looking at. He used to be a course horse here, but is really, he still makes the cut every year, but he kind of fizzled off the last few years, but used to be a top 20 lock here every year. So, would be interesting, but this year, since coming back off of the injury, he's just missed every single cut, so too worried about the injury to really go in on him, but I'll have a share or two just in case. We're nearing the bottom of the pool, and DraftKings actually lowered the bottom part of the pool to 6,000 instead of ending at 6,400 this week, so down at 6,300, we have Matt Jones, who actually ranks second overall in the efficiency scoring projections. Small-ish sample size of only four tournaments, but still it's pretty nice. made the cut here 4 out of 5 years, so that's pretty impressive, I guess. And last we saw him, he had missed the cut to Puerto Rico, and he was one of the most expensive guys there, so that's really concerning for me. But he did make the cut at Houston, so maybe you can keep it going in Texas, I don't know. But $6,300, you're not really looking for too much here. And he looks to be in a pretty nice spot. His odds are way better than everyone else in this range. I guess if you really need to go down this far, he's not a bad option. I also like Cameron Tringali, who has some pretty impressive course history here. He's made 6 of 7 cuts, with a T8 in 2011, T5 in... Oh, well, T8 in 2012. T8 in 2012. T11. Oh my gosh, this is getting late. T8 in 2012 and T5 in 2011. Has recently done all right. Made a lot more cuts than he's missed. And had the T8 finish at the Genesis. So I do believe he's made 4 or 5 cuts recently. So not terrible. Great scrambling game. Just kind of short off the tee for me, honestly. But, you know, we're taking random shots down low. So if you're looking for a very low-owned guy who's had some pop here before and could possibly do it again, Cameron Tringali, you could do a lot worse. And believe me, there are plenty of ways you could do a lot worse. I'm very interested to see if FanDuel will add Rafael Campos, kind of a late addition to the field, to the player pool, because right now he's not in the FanDuel player pool, but he's 6,200 on DraftKings. He's super, super, super interesting. One of the highest projected players on the board as far as value goes. Three starts on tour, and he's made the cut in every one. Now, he didn't get his third straight top 10 finish last week, but a T32 outing, still very respectable. 114-1 odds, and he's surrounded by guys who are like 300-1, 400-1. So at 6,200, almost dead minimum, Rafael Campos might be a little, I don't know if he'll be popular. Maybe people remember him. They'll see like the average DraftKings points just stick out like a sore thumb, things like that. But I don't think he'll get past like 5% owned. He's an awesome play. We've seen a bit of him now, and he's been pretty good. I wouldn't go too crazy on him because we haven't seen a whole lot of him, but so far, awesome approach game, awesome green and regulation game. The driving, not really been there, but, you know, at 6,200, this is obviously the best play of anyone, like, down at the bottom of the barrel, because as you get down into the $61,000 and $6,000 range, your best bet would probably be Rory Sabatini. Yeah. It's not that great, so unless you want to take a huge gamble on 500-1 Ben Curtis, who won in 2012, then you're going to be tough-pressed to find any options down here. So that will wrap up this field for now. Stay tuned as the odds update, the projections update. I'll get these projections on the Domination Station, so you can optimize a bajillion lineups, try to get that winning combo. We're going to try to have FanDuel on the Domination Station once we figure out the proper projection system for that. So stay tuned to that in the near future. If you want to have access to all the things that we have talked about on this podcast, you should come and join us. Check us out. We are a great community. DFSArmy.com. Promo code TACO. That'll pretty much wrap up this podcast, so good night, you guys, and go out there and win those tournaments. Let's see those helmets up top. Later.
Thank you for listening to the DFS Army Podcast. Join the DFS Army today and gain access to our private Slack chat, where you can chat with real DFS pros and coaches, as well as other DFS Army members with winning track records. Also included in your membership is access to our premium articles, DFS Army weighted projections for every sport we offer, from NFL to MMA. weekly player picks and cheat sheets, the strategy vault of timeless concepts, and the DFS Army Domination Station, a truly state-of-the-art lineup optimizer offering your personal projections or ours. The DFS Army membership is the best value across the industry. Join today and get two free ebooks, as well as The Secrets to Unlocking a New Level to Your Game.